One of the most important whistleblowers of this decade is a man who is mostly unknown to the world. Daniel Hale, a former National Security Agency intelligence analyst and member of the U.S. Air Force, bravely told the world that the U.S. drone war was wildly unreliable and that it was causing the deaths of an untold number of innocent civilians, including women and children. This was despite the Pentagon's protest that the drone program was reliable, accurate, and safe. That, of course, wasn't true. But somebody had to pay for embarrassing the Trump and Biden administrations and the U.S. military, and that person was Daniel Hale. I'm John Kiriakou, and you're watching The Whistleblowers. Daniel Hale is a bona fide American hero. I don't say that lightly. Most of you know that a whistleblower's motivation is irrelevant. To be a whistleblower, one must only bring to light evidence of waste, fraud, abuse, illegality, or threats to the public health or public safety. But Daniel Hale made his revelations because it was the right thing to do. He felt moral and ethical outrage at what he was seeing in his job as a drone operator, and he felt compelled to do something about it. Hale released documents that came to be known as the Drone Papers to the online news outlet The Intercept, and he spoke out again later in an award-winning film called National Bird. He said, for example, that during 1 5-month period in 2012, nearly 90% of those people killed in drone strikes were not the intended targets, but civilian bystanders, innocent people killed, were classified as enemies killed in action unless proven otherwise. We're going to talk about this outrageous case with our guest, Ray McGovern. Ray is a former senior CIA officer who served for 27 years. He was President George H.W. Bush's morning intelligence briefer and was the recipient of the CIA's Intelligence Commendation Medal, which he returned in protest. Ray is now a noted activist and is the co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Ray, welcome to the show. Ray, you know Daniel Hale personally. So many whistleblowers come to whistleblowing from different points of view. Give us an overview of his case. Daniel Hale was just a guy doing a job. How did all that change?
Well, he realized that there's a gradation of values to your job. And the one that supersedes all the others is the oath that we all take to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. When he saw what we were doing with these drones and these forever wars, his conscience prevailed, okay? And when he saw that over a 5-month period, as is really as clearly indicated in the documents, 200 people were killed with drones, 90%, like 90%, were civilians, counted as military casualties. Now, if my arithmetic is correct, 200 killed, 180 of those civilians. Now, his conscience told him that he needed to stop that. Whatever he could do, he'd stop it. He knew, and I know this personally, he knew the risk he was taking. He was going to take it anyway. He's in the best tradition of whistleblowers. I mean, his far distant predecessor, relative even, Nathaniel Hale. Remember? I regret that I only have one life to give for my country. Wow, you don't get any better than that. In other words, he knew what he was doing when he went into it. Like Daniel Ellsberg, like Edward Snowden, they fully expected to have to spend the rest of their life in jail for exposing something that their oath to the Constitution and their conscience dictated that they expose. Now, not all of us are up to that. You were, John, but I wasn't. Maybe I could give you a negative example of that by and by during this interview.
One of the things that has struck me about Daniel Hale is how intelligent he is. He's an extraordinarily bright young man. His whistleblowing was calculated. He knew exactly what he was getting himself into. His revelations were not an accident. My point here is that He made a decision to put the stories of untold victims of the drone program and the futures of possible drone victims above his own well-being. Do you see his situation the same way? He wasn't the proverbial accidental whistleblower, was he?
No, he was very deliberate. And you know, watching our government, for example, I remember very, very specifically that Dianne Feinstein, who was supposed to be the supervisory committee, the committee that looks at CIA and other operations, she was like sort of the overlook committee. And when she interviewed John Brennan, sort of like the godfather in both senses of the word, of this drone program, when he was about to become head of Central Intelligence, she said, Brennan. Okay, look, she said, Mr. Brennan, it's a wonderful program. I'm told that the number of civilian casualties are in the single digits. And Brennan smiled. This is, a bunch of malarkey, all right? Single digits. Well, I just told you for 1 5-month period, 10% or 20, 80% of the people killed were actually civilians. So when Dan Hale looked at that and saw that, the intelligence committees were not going to reveal what was going on, he decided to do it himself, and it's to his great credit that he did that despite risking imprisonment where he is now. So you don't get too many people like that. You are one, John. Ellsberg was another. I have to tell you, Ed Snowden said specifically when he arrived in Hong Kong, he says, I know the CIA station's right down the street here. I know they're almost certainly going to get me. But I'll do it anyway because I swore an oath to the Constitution, all right? There's a Fourth Amendment in the Constitution, and that's what I was trying to protect. Now, in the event, it was Julian Assange, Sarah Harrison, and others who got him out of there. And it was an incredibly artful way that they got him on that Aeroflot plane. That's another story. But he lived to tell the tale. And he's got a small family now, two little boys and a wife in Moscow. He'd like to be here in this country, but he's proud of what he did. And we needed to know what he did. Again, Congress did not act as it should have in prohibiting NSA, CIA, and others from continuing to violate the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution of the United States.
When Daniel Hale decided to make his revelations, he went to The Intercept. This was actually quite controversial because many national security whistleblowers who have gone to The Intercept have found themselves to be sent to trial and then on to prison. NSA whistleblower Reality Winner, for example, went to The Intercept. They exposed her identity. FBI whistleblower Terry Albury went to The Intercept and they exposed his identity. The two national security journalists at The Intercept, Richard Esposito and Matthew Cole, were the journalists responsible for sending me to prison. The same thing that happened to all of us happened to Daniel Hale at The Intercept. What is going on there? Are they that unprofessional, or are they somehow connected to the national security establishment?
Well, The Intercept has fallen on bad times. When you think how it was set up and what it was out to do, what has happened? Well, you know, the proof is in the pudding. They were unwilling to publish Greenwald's expose of the Biden laptop story before the last election. Wow, they sat on it. They wouldn't publish what Robert Greenwald had. He had to publish himself, and he had to leave The Intercept, a institution that he had himself co-founded. Now, from what I know, and no one knows everything about everything, of these cases that you just mentioned, my impression is that Daniel Hale was convinced that he would be found out and that he was willing to pay the price unlike the others. There is circumstantial evidence that he didn't take the rudimentary precautions that prevent the what the Soviets used to call the organs of state security from finding out who you were. So the others, I think, were really traceable to incompetence or worse. Daniels, I happen to know enough about that to indicate that he was willing to pay the price and he is unwilling to hide for the rest of his life. So I'm not saying it's his own fault, but he knew that going in and he acted in that way. So his case, in my view, was a little bit different.
Daniel Hale at his sentencing gave one of the most inspirational speeches that I've ever heard in my life. In that statement that he made, he said, and I quote, "I believe that it is wrong to kill, but it is especially wrong to kill the defenseless. I shared what was necessary to dispel the lie that drone warfare keeps us safe, that our lives are worth more than theirs," unquote. He also said that he had to kill a part of his own conscience to do his job. He also paraphrased his ancestor, Nathan Hale, and said, "I have but this one life to give in the service of my country." These are incredibly powerful words, Ray. At the same time, the prosecutor in this case said that Daniel did not provide a public service. He endangered soldiers. There is, of course, nothing at all to indicate that this was the case. Give me your thoughts on Daniel Hale's legacy. What do you think that'll be?
Well, that's what prosecutors do, of course. They're not above twisting the truth. I'm reminded of when Chelsea Manning revealed the secrets on our wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The initial complaint from the prosecutors and from everybody else was that we were endangering sources and methods, and not only that, but people. Well, guess what? When the head of the Defense Department at the time, a fellow by the name Robert Gates, was asked to substantiate that, he came back and told the head of the Senate Armed Services Committee, Levin was his name. He said, "Well, you know, we've looked into this, and there's no evidence that anyone was harmed by virtue of these disclosures." So they couldn't substantiate that anyone was so much as spat upon in reaction to these truths coming out. So that's always a technique that the prosecutors use. You know, when you think about the people that Dan Hale saw being killed, or you know, gathering chestnuts or gathering grapes or whatever, being killed, who are these people? Well, the powers that be, the John Brennans of this world, consider those people, well, what the Germans used to call Untermenschen, okay? People that are below the rest of us Menschen, okay? Now, when he talked about his conscience, you know, my conscience is also formed by what we Catholics call the preferential option for the poor. And the Vatican made that explicitly clear back in 1975 when they said, here's what that means, a preferential option for the poor. No one, quote, "no one is entitled to accumulate still more of what he doesn't need when others lack the rudimentary basics of life," period, end quote. Well, the supreme indignity, of course, is being deprived of life without due process. And that's what was happening to 90% of those civilians in Afghanistan, Iraq, under that Brennan regime. Do you remember, John? I think it was every Tuesday. It was Tuesday or Thursday. I think it was Tuesday. John Brennan brought a list to President Obama. And that list included the names of people who would be obliterated by drones that particular week, okay? And you know, can you see it? I mean, here's Obama's like, "No, John, this fellow, Ali so-and-so, didn't you tell me that he has a wife and five kids?
Yeah, Mr. President, we found out that he was having lunch with a suspected terrorist in Lebanon, so I think we get him.
But John, you know, let's put him at the bottom of the list, and let's look at that again next week. Let's kill the other 10, okay, John?
Oh, yes, sir, Mr. President.
Hello? Give me a break. That's the way it went down. And no one was held accountable. The only way we know all this stuff is for people like Daniel Hale. My hat's off to him.
Thanks, Ray. You're watching The Whistleblowers. Stay tuned to hear more from former CIA officer and activist Ray McGovern.
Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously, why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
During the Second World War, in Nazi-occupied Poland, Volhynia was a farming region. Today, it's part of Ukraine. Between 1943 and 1945, members of the Ukrainian insurgent army led by Stepan Bandera massacred thousands of Poles in Volhynia in a diabolical ethnic cleansing process. The murders were particularly horrific and brutal. Villages were burned and property looted. The Volhynia massacre is without doubt one of the bloodiest episodes in Polish-Ukrainian history. Why are Ukrainian politicians still reluctant to talk about these events? How do modern-day Ukraine and Poland view this tragedy of the past? And why does the memory of Volhynia still divide people?
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. We're talking about the case of American drone whistleblower Daniel Hale, and we're joined by former senior CIA officer Ray McGovern. Ray is now a noted activist and the co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Good to have you back, Ray. I want to ask you about people considering becoming whistleblowers, especially in the national security arena. I get calls from people with some frequency asking for advice. I'm sure you do, too. What do you tell people like Daniel Hale who are struggling with the decision to go public? It's not a secret that the entire weight of the U.S. government will fall on their heads if they go public with their information.
Well, I say, if you're in Hawaii, fly east. What do I mean by that? I mean that Edward Snowden had done his homework. He knew that if he went to the U.S. or any points west, east for him, whatever it was, to the U.S., he couldn't escape being found out and imprisoned. So he went to Hong Kong. That's why he went to Hong Kong, to release this stuff, to give it to journalists and have a couple days before they found him. He fully expected to be found, as I said before. So he was able to do this. Why? Because he was smart enough to outsmart the system. So I'd say to a whistleblower, look, first you need to decide if you're willing to risk what might be in store for you. And if you are, well, I give you my unadulterated encouragement. Now, before you go and do this thing, figure out how best to do it and how most securely to do it. There are all kinds of ways these days, okay? Not only WikiLeaks, but others. So figure that out. And go ahead and do it. And don't be left with the kind of conscience that I have.
When Daniel Hale was sentenced in the notorious District Court for the Eastern District of Virginia, Judge Liam O'Grady shocked everybody by giving him a sentence of 45 months in prison. But Judge O'Grady recommended that Daniel go to a low-security prison where he could be treated for depression and addiction issues. The U.S. Bureau of Prisons ignored that recommendation and instead sent him to the Communications Management Unit of the Supermax Prison at Marion, Illinois. This is one of the two most secure and most dreaded prisons in the entire U.S. prison system. Daniel's now incarcerated with some of the most dangerous people in the world, including terrorists and mafia leaders. What's the message that we should all take from this?
Well, it's the same message that we're giving, we're trying to give with respect to Julian Assange. We're going to get you. And when we get you, we're going to treat you brutally. We're going to get you. We're going to put you in prison. So don't do what you might be tempted to do, what your conscience tells you you should do, okay? It's that brutal. And those people are running, and not the judges, for God's sake, the prison people, what we call the deep state, all those three-letter agencies that have purview over our government, to include over our president, I have to tell you. Look at what's happening in Ukraine. So, you know, it's really a tough situation, and that's precisely. Now, John, I visited you in prison. You were able not to end up in these really, really bad prisons. But, you know, I just finished with this thought about prisons. It was Dostoevsky who said, you know, if you want to measure the level of civilization of a given country, go visit its prisons. Go visit its prisons. We wouldn't shape up very well under those circumstances.
Daniel will be released from prison, Ray, sometime in early 2024. What can he expect when he gets out? Certainly, the government will make his post-prison life difficult. They do that to all of us. What do you think awaits Daniel Hale?
Well, I think he'll feel the same way you did, John, and the others who have done their time, like Chelsea Manning. Daniel Hale will be able to get the Oscar, so to speak. We call it the candlestick holder for spreading light in dark places of the Sam Adams Association. The same Sam Adams will be giving him that in person, and he will be welcomed by those of us who know the hardships that he will have endured and who admire his courage in facing into that, even though he knew what the risks were and told the truth anyway. So there will be a community. You know, you just said, I'm thinking, John, when you went away to prison, there was a mammoth ball, a big celebration on the top of one of the fanciest hotels in Washington. And we all said, goodbye, John, we'll see you later. And when you came back, we welcomed you. So, you know, a lot of people still admire courage and a feeling of integrity. There'll be those people to welcome Daniel Hale as he gets out of these ridiculous situations in prison.
Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, the group that you co-founded, that's made up of retired officials from the CIA, FBI, NSA, the military, and the British MI5 and MI6, recently gave Daniel Hale its Sam Adams Award for Integrity and Intelligence. Tell us about the award and about why it was so important to honor Daniel.
Well, there's no better prize for someone. He has really good predecessors in having that award. Colleen Rowley from the FBI was the first one 20 years ago, okay? 2002, we all know what was happening then. She warned about it. Other recipients have been Julian Assange, Manning, many really courageous folks. So Daniel is in this heritage line of 20 people, he being the 20th, have stood up to the government and said, look, our primary oath is the Constitution. You are violating it. So we're going to expose what goes on here. Now, Sam Adams, I already told you, was a person who was extremely bright and had the right answers. What happened to him? Well, he was shunned. He was shunned by the agency leadership. Sam had a lot of guts. He went to the IG, the Inspector General, and said, I want to do a complaint on Richard Helms, who happens to be the head of the CIA, because he's lying about Vietnam. you can figure out how far he got with that. But finally, he got his story out. And guess what? Westmoreland, the general, sued him and CBS, that did a 90-minute, 60-minute segment on the falsification of evidence on Vietnam. And guess what? Guess who won? Westmoreland had to withdraw from the suit because people coming out of the woodwork saying, yeah, Sam had the guts to say it right. We were repressed by Westmoreland. We were in the army. We couldn't resist. We needed to get promoted. Sam did the right thing. So the whole thing, it redounded to Sam's benefit. Unfortunately, Sam died early at 53 years old from an unexpected heart attack. I suspect that the whole thing was wearing on him and that he was unable to enjoy basking in the glory of what he actually did. And that's not going to happen to everybody, so don't let that be a deterrent.
Thanks, Ray McGovern, for joining us. That's all we have for you today. I'm John Kiriakou, and this has been The Whistleblowers.